Well, welcome in. Welcome to the Bite Me Fishing and Outdoor Show here on 95.7 The Fan. Good morning. Happy Sunday to everyone. And hey, let's just get started. Captain Dean Thomas, Captain Scott Null, Captain Caleb McCumber, the gang is all here, and we're ready for the podcast. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Got to say that. Podbean, iTunes, Spotify are my top three, but anywhere you get your podcast. And of course, the group page where we got almost all the topics this week from listeners texting me, DMing one of the captains or myself, and let's get started. Let's get started with what we were just talking about off air. And this is what my son and I were talking about yesterday. I went to go see my granddaughter, and he actually caught some fish in Aransas Pass over the weekend. He was at my place over the weekend, caught, I want to say, a good 8-10 trout and redfish. But let's what I told him, Dan, is even just 2 degrees. If we can just get that water temp down 1 or 2 degrees, it might make a difference, or am I full of crap?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the last 2 days, I fished before I made my road trip back up here to H-Town. Mm-hmm. Our water temperature was 85 degrees, so it had definitely dropped. And it was cloud cast completely both days. The second day, right before I left, we actually got ran off the water mm-hmm. by some thunderstorms. Fish were shallow. There were reds in the grass, blowing up on top waters. So, and I don't know, dude. You know, everybody gets the forecast full of drama, as if we haven't covered that topic here once or twice. And sitting here, so we bring up that conversation, man, it's coming your way, blah, blah. Not a drop in Aransas Pass. Very, very spotty down south. And I go look at the forecast for Aransas Pass. Man, they got this thing peaked out with this crazy rain every day. But, you know, if you get 3 drops on your windshield, technically the weatherman calls that a success.
Yeah.
whoever posted that picture of the two hurricanes that we found out was from 2020 on Facebook a week or two ago, that guy can go eat glass and stomp his toe, too.
Man, come dude, on, man. That created a shitstorm. I mean, it was crazy.
It did.
That thing was shared like something like 11,000 times.
Oh, come on, man. But that goes to show you that stuff sells. That you know, a little panic always gets people going.
Yeah. Yep. It sells water, propane, and charcoal, and whatever the hell else. And batteries.
Well, it came out the day before they said that the Gulf is the hottest it's ever been in history.
Yeah. It's and local news. I saw something the other day, just to get off on a quick little tangent here. Local news ratings like 6 years ago, not even that long ago, were like 10s and 11s. That doesn't mean anything to a lot of people, but it'll mean something when I say this. Now they're like 0.5 and 0.6. Like local TV, because they bank on the weather. They bank on the weather. So listen to us. We'll give you Scott. Scott's our resident expert.
You see Justin's comment on there, what he put on the
panic sells almost as good as boobs. Okay. I'm not going to argue that. No errors found. No lies detected, as they say.
Unburdened from the burden that has been.
Wow, that's pretty deep. Huh? That's really, really deep. I told you I could see it on his face. Caleb's a little frisky today, man.
You just said boobs and made me think of Kamala.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Hey, one more thing here, and then we'll get into some other topics. Gotten a lot of questions on the old DM and on messages on Facebook and Instagram about the feeding frenzy presented by On Point Roofing. So I'm going to answer a couple of the questions that we got.
One thing that I've learned about John is he tends to over-prepare. Always. Hey, so did everybody get their fishing license yet?
Always. Always. But you know what that means?
I got my license today.
Attaboy. See, I'm proud of you.
I haven't got my fishing license yet, but I got my
not quite as proud of you. Caleb?
No.
No, Caleb doesn't even have his captain's license yet. So,
Jane? I went and picked mine up the other day. Yes,
look at that. See? Yeah, I tend to over-prepare, but hey, man, that's how we got here. That's how we got here with 375 people RSVP'd and the podcast with 500,000 downloads and the great captains doing what you guys do.
If it wasn't, guys, we would not be having this conversation without you.
Without me over preparing for everything. A couple of other questions. And this was one that we got directly from a listener. I don't know if you guys got it. But he was basically saying, I see you guys talking about these reels, want to support, you know, Shimano and some of the other companies that do great stuff with the podcast. I know Ooze is going to donate some stuff to the Feeding Frenzy and all that. Want to support you guys. But I go fishing about once a month. And Scott, I'm going to talk with you on this because you've been in the industry on that side. He says, I'm an average fisherman. I love to fish, but I'm an average fisherman. Is the most expensive reel what I should really be looking for? Is it that big of a difference? Or does it really matter to how you fish?
If you're just going to occasionally fish, figure out what your budget is. You know, if you're going into Shimano, they have stair steps in their pricing. It's always been that way. About on spinning reels, it's about $20 a step. And each step up gets you more bearings, more metal in the reels, more little features. But even the lower end reels now have the features that used to be in the top end reels. So it rains down, you know, as they get new stuff for the high end reels, then everything trickles down to the lower end reels. So right. You buy a lower end Shimano now, it's the equivalent of a high end from 5-10 years ago.
I think that's what he's wondering. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so yeah, it's got a little more plastic in it. It doesn't have as much metal. You know, maybe the gears aren't made of the same strength metal as the high end ones. But for our average fishing, no, you don't need the high end reels. They're smoother. They're nicer. They're great. They'll last you forever. But really, if you're going once a weekend and you're catching trout and reds, that $99 reel is going to be just fine. You don't need the $300 or $400 reel. I mean, the reel manufacturers want you to have those, of course. But And for the guys who are really into it and you're going to use it a lot, you know, start thinking about it in terms of, okay, I bought a $300 reel, but it lasted me 4, 5, 6 years versus buying a $50 reel that lasts one season.
Right. If you're doing it a lot. And Caleb, that's what I was going to be the follow up with you. We've all had the quote, air quote, less expensive or cheaper reels, whatever you want to call them. To me, it's all about cleaning and taking care of them, man. I mean, if you're only going to fish once a month, you got to do that even more anyway, because they'll lock up on you.
Allegedly. Just slap them a couple times. Now you're paying for maybe feels a little bit better in your hand, maybe it's a little bit lighter. I mean, Scott's busted ass old Tundra is still driving you down to Port O'Connor, but he got tired of the way of squeaking and got him a Ford like a real boy.
Oh boy, here we go.
A lose. Pat uses some sort of lose that he pays like $100-$120 for, and he swears by it. He loves it.
The SLF, I think, is what it's called. I got a couple of those. Yeah.
Yeah, Pat loves it. I use the baits. It costs more money, but it's really comfortable in my hand. It's really smooth. And like Scott said, little pieces, parts in it are maybe made of some better stuff where it'll last a little bit longer. Just wading boots, all that kind of stuff. You can buy cheaper things, but if you're buying one every 2 years versus one every 4 or 5 years, is it actually cheaper? That'd probably be the top point of the entire conversation.
One thing that wasn't mentioned in that on the higher end reels is the balance, especially with spinners. I mean, when they spin, they're absolutely balanced. They're smooth. And yeah, I tell people, you know, if you want to go for the high end stuff, man, there's birthdays and Christmas and, you know, Father's Day and stuff like that. You beat the family down to go buy it for you.
What a great strategy.
This is what I really want, you know. I've been putting up with y'all all year long, and today's my day. Buy me a reel. But agree with what those guys said. Middle of the road is going to get you the same quality, or not the same quality, but a lot of the same components that are in the higher end stuff. You know, when you talk about bearings and things like that. And it will, they'll last a little longer, but it comes down to abuse, how you treat them, how you maintain them. Mm-hmm. Mine have a very short lifespan.
I wonder why.
Back in the day, we had a Cronart, we had the Corrado, and then we had the Citicus. Mm-hmm. Those were the three main bait casting reels from Shimano. And I couldn't afford Kronerks. Yeah, I just didn't want to spend that money. So I did Corrados. Corrados were great. The Citicas you could buy for like $79 back then. I think a Kronark was like $120. And so for all my bay fishing and things where I was, you know, wading around and doing fishing from the boat, I used those Corrados. Mm-hmm. But when we did the surf fishing, we knew we were going to get drenched. We knew our reel was going to take a beating. So we'd go buy Citicas and we'd use them for one season and they get grindy like a salt and pepper shaker. And so at the end of the season, you just toss that one and got you a new one.
Yeah.
And so we kind of considered those to be, you know, they were just throwaways. You didn't replace the bearings. You didn't do anything with them. You oiled them up a little bit and made them get through the season.
All right. Coming up next, are you sure you know how to handle offshore species? Let's talk about it next. We're back. It's offshore season, and I want to get into that this segment, but let's wrap up the real discussion here. Yeah, that's
if you want to go real high end, yeah. you can get you a Stella like Camille, and then you're kicking it.
When I get to the Stella's end of the case, I pick up my pace, and just if I had walking. Scott Null's money, I'd throw mine away. I tell you, I would burn it in the campfire.
Just like I got Scott's money now.
Well, it helps to know Hughes. That doesn't hurt, you know.
Didn't help me at all.
Yeah. Hughes been ghosting me, man. I've been trying to call him. I don't know. I must have said something a couple podcasts back that got me on the
blacklist. Hughes has no complaints after the last 8 minutes of this discussion.
Nah. Hughes is a cool dude, man. He's been around for many, many years.
Yeah.
And if you want to talk technical details on mm-hmm. reels, that dude will confuse you. He will go, he will use words that beyond my ability. But when it comes to the manufacturing and the evolution, there is nobody better than him. If you want to get scientific on those things.
I got to go to his house and go in his office and play the grab game once, and that was fun.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. The grab game.
That's why he doesn't answer your calls anymore.
That's a good game. You grab too much. You grab too much.
Well, what's the line on Rooster Cogburn? Fill your hand, you son of a bitch. That's what I heard in my head.
That's exactly right. Well, good deal. All right. So, see, that was very, very helpful. I think this next one is another topic we haven't really discussed. Scott, I put a little twist on what you sent me because I think it applies to a bunch of different fish that people are targeting, especially this time of year. You were talking about knowing how to handle tarpon. Let's take that a little further because this summertime, a lot of people looking at sharks out there, you know, not just from the surf. I mean, a lot of people are targeting sharks. Kingfish, Dean, that's where you're going to come in, you know, properly targeting kingfish because they're out and about. Well, last I heard, I haven't caught any of this summer yet. But let's start with tarpon on you, Scott, because I think I saw the same picture that you saw, and I kind of did a Scott Null, you know, little shake your head. Just a little Scott Null, lower your head and shake it a little bit. But what'd you see? What are you saying?
It just hurt my feelings to see tarpon dragged over the gunnels. Like it happens every year. Guys get in there. There's one in particular right now that's bugging me a little bit. He should know better. but they're gaffing them through the lip with big old gaff, which that's debatable. Some of the Florida guys say that that's the best way to handle them because you can control them better next to the boat and they don't thrash around so much. That's fine. Yeah, you can put a hole in their lip. That's fine. I prefer to grab them by hand with a gloved hand. But the dragging them up and dragging them over the gunwale and holding them straight up and down, I'm talking the 5, 6, 7 foot fish, these big, big tarpon. They're dragging them into the boat. Scales are all over the place. Slime's all over the place. They're beating themselves up. They get all bloodied up. What really got me going on it was that fellow was fishing near me the other day, and then I was on the end of the jetties with a couple customers, and this fish was swimming by, and it was just finning under the surface, just barely moving, and it was a big tarpon, and it just went by us, and it was beat all to hell.
It wasn't going to make it.
It's obviously beat up, and we threw at it because we saw a tarpon. Well, it just flat ignored everything. It was just barely going along and kind of laying over on its side a little bit. That fish probably died, more than likely, if I had to guess. Grab them by the lip, hold them in the water, get your pictures while they're still in the water. Any of them that are over, you know, 3.5 feet or so, just do that. The smaller ones, I grab those by the lip, support them under their belly, hand them to a customer real quick, have somebody ready to take a shot. They get the picture. I grab it back. I put it back in the water, hold it in the water, keep the boat in motion. If you're not in an area with current, like between the jetties, you don't have to do that. You can just hold them. You got enough current. No. But if you're out on the beachfront, hold them down in the water, keep the boat moving forward, and they'll let you know when they're ready to go. They'll pull away from you. If they do act a little goofy and they kind of lack a little sluggish, grab them by the wrist of the tail and just reach down there and grab them. That usually spurs them on, man. I think it's just their natural reaction to something grabbing them from behind like that. They take off. But Florida does it. They have the laws over there. You can't take tarpon out of the water.
Okay.
If it's over 40 inches, you can't take it out of the water. I'm talking with some folks now, some CCA folks, and they're kind of guiding me towards how to get this possibly in the works for Texas. I'd like to see it. So look for that coming for too long that I'm going to start working on that. I'm going to need some signatures on a petition to get it before the commissioner's court and see if maybe we can get something similar done over here to protect these tarpon a little bit better. Those big tarpon, they're 40, 50 years old. We don't need to be killing them. So that's my dime's worth.
There goes Scott getting more laws and regulations. While
I'm just gonna let that slide.
I can't hardly even turn on this damn show without Noel trying to put more laws and regulations on it.
I think we all know better than that.
Hey, Scott, Curtis Liker came up with a hands-free release device. He was telling me about
it. I saw that. Those just tie your knots real crappy.
Yeah, most people call that device a knot, but it is the hands-free release device.
It gets a little costly on lures, but other than that, it's all right.
Yeah. I saw that one too. But so and that's the thing, Dean. I'm gonna turn to you with the kingfish here, because most people are like, you know what? I've never caught a tarpon. You know, I hear Scott talking about it on the podcast. I'm gonna go do it, or I'm gonna book with Scott, or whatever it is. And you have to know what you're doing. Now, kingfish is a different thing. A lot of people will gaff them, but you don't have to. Just make sure they're tired, right? We'll talk about it next here on 95.7 The Fan. Welcome back. Happy Sunday, everyone. And a reminder that next hour we're going to have a great, great chat with a couple of Texas game wardens. I know you don't want to miss that. Dean, right now we're talking about handling kingfish.
It's hard to get a green kingfish to the boat because and if you do, it will kill you. It will.
That's a word of warning right there. Make sure they're not green because they will kill you.
It's an aggressive creature, and its face is full of razor blades, and they thrash at this violent pace. Mm-hmm. The thing about kingfish is they fight to the death, man. I mean, they literally burn themselves out. They don't release well. They really don't. But if you are going to release a kingfish, when you fight that thing, you get it next to the boat. You have your pliers in your hand. I grab them by the tail with some good gloves is my preference. Mm-hmm. Get the hook out as quickly as possible, which not an easy task. I mean, they will slice you to the bone. Mm-hmm. Their mouth has razor blades that are pointing in every direction, and they will hurt you bad. They also have fins that will cut you. The fins, the little knobs on the tail, if you grab that thing without really good gloves and it slides through your hand, you're going to see the bones of your fingers poking out. But they're hard to release.
You realize we're trying to get people to release them, right? Nah,
don't go out there half-stepping. They will hurt you, man. Don't go out there without good gloves, some badass pliers, and those are the bare necessities. I like a little light fighting belt. I mean, even for light tackle, you want to have a decent fighting belt for those things. I mean, they are savage. But if you're – going to gaff anything, I mean, you better plan on putting it in the cooler because it's not going to it's not going to release well with a big bloody hole in the side of it.
And they're fun but when you can release them.
Kingfish.
Look at that.
There's two 7-year-olds just taking their life in their hands that they caught that sucker without a fighting belt.
Yeah. And with a five-year-old spinning reel that rattled.
I would highly recommend it. Go ahead, Scott.
I grab them by that wrist of the tail with a glove. If they're not huge ones, you can lift them straight up out of the water and hang them straight up and down, and they won't hardly twist around or do anything.
They kind of freeze.
Yeah, they pretty much freeze, and then you can get the hook out pretty good. And to release them, just throw them back, you know, shoot them back into the water head first. Let them go that way. And there's no holding them and letting them swim around and do all that. They'll start thrashing and carrying on.
You kind of shoot them back in the water like a spear. I've done. You just kind of spear the water with them, and that you'd be surprised. I've never lost one that I know of.
Yeah, they take off pretty good.
If you want to post a trout video, you hang him by his lip and get a weight that goes really damn well.
Video
gets 200,000 views and 500 comments, but I started getting an ulcer listening to some of the opinions of the experts out there on what a trout can and can't survive. Well, they'd hate to know that we took a little baseball bat and bonked that sumbitch so he'd lay real still to get a measurement.
That's what you did to that kingfish. You ain't fooling nobody. Yeah. You beat that thing with a ball bat before those two little kids held it up.
I hit the kids a couple of times before they caught their kingfish.
That too. A lot of people out there trying to catch sharks. Sometimes you catch them by accident when you're out where we like to fish near shore and on the jetties and stuff. Anything special there that our listeners need to know?
There's something real special that you need to release shark. It's called a knife.
Right there with releasing stingrays.
Come on.
Yes.
Man. Now the smaller sharks up to about, I don't know.
Yes.
Three and a half. You just grab them in the back, right?
You get as much line back on your reel as you want, and then you cut the rest.
That one footer will jack you up too.
Yeah, he will.
Yeah, don't be grabbing a shark by the tail. Never. That wrist of the tail thing does not work on sharks. They can spin around and bite themselves.
And when you put a shark in the boat, their fins become feet. They will run around the boat on those fins, and they will go from the back of the boat to the front of the boat to the other side of the boat. They'll climb up the console as well as if they are in the water.
I've never heard it put like that.
I have. They swim on dry land.
Their fins
become... They're land sharks.
No. They run around. They will chase your ass around the boat.
Yeah.
Right there at Frog Legs jumping out of the skillet. It's the same problem.
Same thing.
On sharks, I got my gloves on. I get the hold of the leader, get the leader up tight, and little side cutters, and sacrifice the hook.
Yeah, always sacrifice the hook.
Yeah,
you can grab them like you grab your son in church, like to tell him to not fidget. You grab them right behind the neck. That's what I've told my kid. Just grab them behind the neck and squeeze like your kid's fidgeting around.
You got hands like Elijah one. Yeah,
I do it all the time.
You ain't catching big sharks then.
I said up to about 3.5 feet. Yeah, just go.
My mom used to grab me by the ear and drag me out of church. But I don't know if sharks have ears.
They got feet.
They got fin feet.
They got feet. Shit, yeah. I guess. Throw one in the boat and watch what happens.
Yeah. Oh, no, I've seen it. I just never have quite heard it put like that.
You see everybody going for the highest spot in the boat real fast.
I just posted in my gar releasing technique on Bite Me on Facebook. So you have to interact with the socials to find out the secrets.
Yeah.
Hey, I posted the picture about the panicking the public as we were speaking as well. So if you want to see how socially active we are, we post while we do the podcast.
All right, so another question here regarding sharks, and I'll just read it.
Scott's looking at it right now. Yeah, I see the reflection in his glasses.
Food for thought for the podcast, it says a listener. Went wading last weekend, Port O'Connor. Had sharks show up everywhere. We went within close proximity. Everywhere we went within close proximity, all around 5 to 7 feet long. He says, one of our guys had to bat one away with his rod as it was coming directly for him. He was fishing plastics, so no bait, nothing on the stringer. How do you guys handle that other than how I would handle it? And that would be, you know what? I don't need them that bad. I don't need those fish that bad if there's that many sharks. And what would you do when they're coming around?
I just stay in the boat pretty much. I mean, I got a poling skiff for a reason.
That's what I just said. You know,
it's just not fun. But when I did wade, I made damn sure my stringer was a quick release. And if they wanted that stringer more than me, they could have it. You can do all that, hitting them with the end of your rod or popping the water with the end. You know what that does? It creates a stir and a splash, and that attracts more sharks.
Yeah.
There's a new thing. I haven't tried it. I've heard good things about it. That's a shark repellent deal.
They have it at Anglers Anonymous. It's really cool.
I don't fully get it, but from what I've heard about it, and I've heard it from some pretty reliable people, that it does actually work. It keeps the sharks away from them. So maybe look into something like that. It's some magnetic deal or I don't know.
Supposed to work on stingrays and sharks. And yeah, you just hang it from your belt, you know, from whatever belt you're wearing. And apparently it does work. I haven't used it, but I also feel like they wouldn't have it at Anglers Anonymous if it wasn't good. I mean, we know what they do over there. So
they need to get me one and let me hang it off the side of my boat on the beachfront and see if the sharks still come around, because I get sharks around my boat every day.
Yeah.
You should hang it around your neck and jump in there with them and see what happens.
That would be a better test.
That would be better. And the thing about sharks, I mean, I watch Shark Week like everybody else. And we're supposedly not on their menu, but when I don't want to be a statistic either, man. You know, I don't want to be the exception to that rule.
I always like when we see like some kid or some person, I shouldn't say kid, you know, got like whatever, nipped by a shark in the leg. And you all see the same thing in the stories. Sharks normally don't attack people. Well, but there's one of these stories every week. It's like every week.
Tell that to the dude with his leg missing. Yeah.
The most dangerous part of it when we're fishing out of the boat is landing the fish. I always look around like land jacks, especially. I don't know what it is. They love to eat a jack. Mm-hmm. And as I'm landing a jack, I'm scanning the water real hard before I ever reach down there and grab it up. I've had more than one bull shark swim out from under the boat as I'm grabbing jacks.
Yeah.
And that's the most dangerous time. He goes for that jack. He don't care what else he gets. Mm-hmm. You know, if my hand's in the way, that's so be it. So I'm always watching real close for that. There was a guy out of Florida that got bit landing a snook. Was it 2 years ago? Mm-hmm. And he got messed up pretty bad. It got a hold of him and did the shark roll thing and really messed his hand up pretty bad.
Man. All right. Let's go inshore a bit next segment and talk about when they're there, but you just can't get them to bite. We'll talk about it next. Howdy, everyone. Welcome back to the Bite Me Fishing and Outdoor Show. Before we get to getting fish to bite when you know they're there, Scott, a listener wants to know what species is harder on trout, dolphin or shark?
For the trout, that's what he was asking, you know, which one's worse about eating the trout? Dolphins.
Well, that is true.
100%. You can't get a trout away from a dolphin if they're hanging out. You can't get a ladyfish away from them either. When they've been showing up here lately at the jetties, we're catching a lot of ladyfish mixed in with our little tarpon. I know the dolphins are there for the ladyfish. As soon as those things show up, the tarpon move off. They'll move down to jetties somewhere else. So I've had them coming up to my boat several times here recently, and I had to move.
All right. So this is a Caleb special, I feel, because he's been all about trying to get, we all have, but more in a tournament sense, trying to get redfish to bite when they're not really hitting anything. So Caleb, I'm going to start with you. He called it attention getters for redfish. I saw many reds active along edges of tall shoreline grass. I'd be curious to know what suggestions you guys have on what to throw to get their attention. And he did what we've all done. He tried the weedless, the plastic, topwater, gold spoon, et cetera. Is there such a thing, or is this just you just keep throwing until you figure it out as a good attention getter? Like either they'll bite that or they ain't biting, you know, when you're looking at redfish.
Me and Robert Jones throw spare change out of our pocket into the water as an offering to the redfish gods.
That's not a bad idea.
He threw a $20 bill in there one time. It was going that kind of bad.
Well, that is a bad idea. That one is a bad idea. That one I'm not going to sign off on.
I watched a dude throw a $100 bill off the back of the boat offshore one day. I thought that was the stupidest fucking thing I ever seen in my life.
Why did he do that? For the same reason?
Yeah, he's trying to buy a bite.
Man, I'd have done it for 50.
In Costa Rica. Oh, you remember in Costa Rica, the deckhand, he poured a beer over the side. And that made more sense than throwing money in the water.
It did.
We had a shitload of beer on that boat. That didn't make a difference.
It did.
When I was in high school, we found out if you drank Zima and peed off the Nueces River Bridge, it'd make the white bass bite.
Zima? That's an old school pool right there.
We didn't have much. We didn't have much to choose from in the test pool because that's the only thing we can get that guy at the Texaco to buy us. But
man, dude, I get mad when a lure breaks off, and that only costs me like $8.
Yeah, dude's throwing a 20 and a 100 in the water. So, is there no magic bait that if they're not biting this, they ain't biting nothing?
If they won't bite a gulp shrimp, they ain't biting nothing.
Good answer.
The water's a little off color, I'd try a spinner bait.
Yeah, spinnerbait, wakebait, chatterbait. We use chatterbaits a bit. But you already said he used he hasn't used anything subsurface that rattled, so spinnerbait, chatterbait, wakebait. Wait, against the grass it'd be dang hard to use a wakebait because by the time you got it going, it'd be off the grass.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of the gulp. That's a good one if you really just like, we gotta get some kind of bite here.
I did not read the rundown today. Mm-hmm. And
you're forgiven.
I got a text earlier from a guy that I fish with, and he was asking me kind of the similar question, man. He has schools of reds that were running up and down the shoreline. And, like, he was they wanted to be there. Like, they were just staying there, and he could not get them to bite. And that's what I was asking him. I was like, what'd you throw? I mean, he went down the list. And, you know, some days they just have other things on their mind. I mean, we've all seen that happen where – I mean, you could bump them in the nose. You could throw everything you want, and they just—I mean—they got other whatever's going on in their BB brain. It's just not eating at that point.
We put a gulp on a spinnerbait way more than once.
Really?
Yeah.
I put a spinnerbait on a topwater with a gulp on it.
Well, I was there for that. That just because I was kicking your ass, you're getting desperate and freaking out.
I just can't believe that John didn't go with popping cork.
No. I was waiting. It was in the barrel. I was waiting for y'all to finish, and this is what I was going to say, Scott.
Like the big y'all fireworks.
Y'all are going to make me say popping cork, aren't you? Y'all are going to make me say popping cork. I had it in the barrel. I was waiting for y'all to finish, and the answer is yes, popping cork. I've had so many people, and I've said this too, and nobody believes it. I throw a popping cork maybe 10-15% of the time, but I always throw it because I just think it's an attention getter, especially in situations like what we're talking about here. But everybody does it and no one admits to it because they're not man enough to it. They're not comfortable enough in their manness to admit that they throw a popping cork like I am.
Are we just awoke one today?
I'm surprised Dean didn't say cut mullet, but.
I put cut mullet on a gulp on a spinner on a topwater under a popping cork.
I can't believe it didn't work. I just can't believe it didn't work. All right, so now here's a really good one. I think we can dig in here before we get to what Scott do, what Kayla do, what would Dean do. I thought this was a great question because when I read it, I'm like, I know my guys here, and I know they're not this jaded. Maybe a little jaded. But not this jaded, because the question is about, do you guys still love I'm paraphrasing. Do you guys still love all the other things beside fishing? And I'm going to read it to you so you can get a good feel for it. Everyone addicted to fishing should admit that catching fish keeps us coming back to the water. But sometimes that can't be had, or that can be hard, I should say. I've realized that there's much more to being on the water that keeps me going back. Seeing a juvenile dolphin jumping out of the water, seeing a fever of rays cruising right past you on your boat, on the grass flats, an old sea turtle covered in barnacles coming up to take a breath. And he said, for me, those are the things that make the hard days worth it. And I wondered if very experienced guys like the captains here still draw a lot of joy from those kinds of things. I'm going to go ahead and answer for you and then get y'all's answers. The answer is yes. I think like people who are on the water as much as I am, and certainly as much as you guys are, you can't just be all about the fishing and be out on the water for as many years as you've been. Scott, I mean, I know I'm answering for you, but that's got to be your answer. I mean, that's what keeps me going. I'll pull, you know, little with my wife, I'll pull little seahorses out of the water for 20 minutes, you know, just to watch them, you know, or whatever. But
if you're that jaded that the only joy you get out of it's the catching, then you know, you're in the wrong business. If you get that way, take some kids fishing and watch the kids react to everything.
Good.
One of the things I did with my girls when they were growing up, reach out there and grab a big old wad of that sargasm as it floats by and shake it out on the deck, and all kind of cool little creatures fall out of it and they're all excited about it. Or as my oldest called it, sarcasm weed. Yeah, I had a couple kids out the other day, and the little girl, she was out there we were out there 6-7 hours. She never picked a rod up. And all she did was look at turtles. She named all the turtles. We had a pelican that was swimming right up to the boat, eating right off the side of the boat, eating the minnows that were in the shadows of the boat. Just all the cool little things that happen out there. I get into it. That's part of why I like the beachfront so much, is there's just all kind of cool things that are going on. Spinner sharks are jumping. You know, the dolphins, I've watched them surf, and they're having fun. You know, they're enjoying themselves in the surf. All that stuff is cool to me, and just being out there.
And Caleb, you've been on the tournament circuit, which that's hard to disconnect. Like tournament circuit, you're not having fun watching dolphins, but it's hard to reconnect, I should say, when you're just out there with clients and just enjoying the reason that you really are out there, you know?
I'm out there for the gram, baby.
Yeah, for the bikinis.
Get that picture. No, Instagram, John, Instagram. I guess the cool thing now is the TikTok. When the fishing's slow, I can still have great fun making fun of everybody else that's on the boat. That's kind of my go-to. They seem to enjoy it.
I can confirm that.
No, I mean, I like the camaraderie is what I'm trying to say, I guess.
Yeah, I can confirm
that. I also like to text you and tell you how many fish we're catching, whether we're catching any or not.
You did that very recently. I was like, what the hell is going on here? It's like, why is this happening to me?
Smoking them.
I'll take a sunrise picture, and then I'll wait until 10 o'clock to send it.
That's when I go on the air.
As soon as I know he's on the air, that's when I send it.
And what do I usually text back? You son of a bitch. Well, that's a good way. And Dean, I'm going to get to you next, but that's a good way to explain what I do. And a lot of times, I'm out on that water and I ain't catching squat. I am as happy as can be. Sometimes I'll just put the power pole down and just sit there, and I'll kind of envision in my mind, I ain't in Houston traffic. I am right here in the middle of whatever bay I'm on, and life is good. But Dean, I know you probably more than any of us, you're out there for just all the ambiance.
How it goes for me, that alarm clock goes off at 4:30, and it's like, man, this sucks. Why did I do this? And then you drag your ass, you go drag all them poles, you drag all that to the boat, you get all that ready. And when I hit the corner and I'm looking at that sunrise coming up, I don't give a rat's ass about any of it. People are pulling out their cameras, man. They're taking pictures, you know, with the sun coming up. And then I realize I ain't got a damn thing to do for the rest of the day but float around on this boat and look for fish. And then none of that getting up at 4:30 matters anymore.
You are absolutely right on that. Okay, so coming up next hour, a lot of folks have been wanting to hear from Texas game wardens on this show, and so you will. Also, a quick chat with a Houston Texans player who's been bit pretty hard by the old fishing bug. We'll talk about it all next here on 95.7 The Fan.